We're going to be looking into his word in Ecclesiastes chapter 8. We're continuing this series. We're working through the book of Ecclesiastes. And so the last week, we actually read Ecclesiastes chapter 8, 1 at the very end of the message last week. And so this week, we're going to be in Ecclesiastes chapter 8, starting in verse 2. And you may be wondering why that is. Why do you finish the sermon last week with 8, 1, and then begin this one with 8, 2? And that's because the numbers that you see in your Bible are not inspired. The numbers that you see in the Bible, the chapters and the verses, those were organized by men a long, long, long time ago to help us find our place in there. And they just kind of went through it, and we've never really looked back and changed it or criticized it too much to say, does this make sense? Because sometimes it doesn't make sense. And really, chapter 8, verse 1 should have been chapter 7, verse 30. But that's why. That's why that happens sometimes, because the numbers aren't inspired. There were no numbers. There weren't even any spaces between the words in the originals. So a lot of it is just editorial comment is what it is. But we're going to be in chapter 8, verse 2 this morning. And but getting ready for that, I hope last week wasn't too discouraging for you, because if it could have been, right? Last week was where I probably said way too many times for you to feel comfortable with yourself. You're not good, right? No one is righteous. You're not righteous. Stop thinking you're righteous. You're a sinner. We said that a lot. It was maybe a tough reminder. It was a harsh reality that even though God has declared us righteous, praise God, He has declared us righteous. He calls us righteous. And that makes all the difference when we stand in judgment for our sin before Him. He's declared us righteous. And even though He has gifted us with wisdom and the leading of the Holy Spirit, given us the ability to navigate life in a godly way, even though those things are true, we're still sinners. We're still unrighteous. And inside us exists this tension of wise living and unrighteousness. And a tendency to sin. And knowing that about ourselves and knowing God's nature and who He is should really push us to stay as close to Him, as John calls it, as close to the light as possible as we can. Because the moment that we think we're good, the moment we think, I got this, I'm all right with this, and we close our Bibles and walk away from them, God in the Bible, we walk away from Him thinking, I got it from here, we're not good and we don't have it from there. Because of who we are. We have to understand our nature and stay close to God and His word. So it's a good, but it's a tough reminder. It's a tough reminder. It hurts a little bit. It's insulting. But so far in the book, the teacher has been making this argument. The teacher in Ecclesiastes has been making this argument based on his experiences, based on his wisdom, that without a belief in God or without living like you believe in God, life is meaningless. Life lacks substance, significance. And so now with chapter 8, and he's kind of begun to tip his hand in the last chapters, but in chapter 8, for sure, the teacher turns his thoughts towards how should we live then? How should life be lived since God exists? That's where he's going to start going for the rest of the book, since God exists. So without God, life is meaningless. He beat that dead horse for 6.5, 7 chapters, right? Without God, this is meaningless. Without God, this is meaningless. Without God, this is meaningless. Over and over and over again. You're meaningless. I'm meaningless. We're all meaningless. 6.5 chapters of it. And now he's turning his attention and going to start saying, but God exists. And since God exists, brings meaning and brings significance, how should we live in light of that? And so this is where we're going to be this morning, in the same idea, since God exists. So here's where his thoughts turn for us today. Look at Ecclesiastes chapter 8. I'm going to read the whole of the passage that we're going to look at this morning, verses 2-8. And so he says this. The teacher says, "Obey the king's command, I say, because you took an oath before God. Do not be in a hurry to leave the king's presence. Do not stand up for a bad cause, for he will do whatever he pleases. Since a king's word is supreme, who can say to him, 'What are you doing?' Whoever obeys his command will come to no harm, and the wise heart will know the proper time and procedure, for there is a proper time and procedure for every matter, though a person may be weighed down by misery. Since no one knows the future, who can tell someone else what is to come? And as no one has power over the wind to contain it, so no one has power over the time of their death. As no one is discharged in time of war, so wickedness will not release those who practice it. When the teacher writes this, he writes it in kind of a style that is familiar to the Hebrews, to his readers. It's wisdom literature, and it reads like that. It reads like a little bit of a string of proverbs put together, which would make sense because the teacher is presenting himself as Solomon, and Solomon wrote the book of Proverbs. There's a lot of those in there, and Solomon collected that wisdom. And so it doesn't quite look like this completely fits together, but it does. It does, and we just have to kind of get ourselves into his mind to see how this does fit together. But that very first verse 2, that very first statement, obey the king's command. This is where he goes first. And some of you maybe groaned inwardly when you saw the title of the sermon this morning, and then you see verse 2 says, obey the king's command. Maybe you even groaned audibly out loud because you're thinking, oh, politics. Politics and government. This is fantastic. I'll tell you, it's not my favorite thing to talk about either from the Bible, because the Bible, I feel, is very clear about it, and we're very unclear about it. But look, this comes up in the text, verse 2, obey the king's command. And this isn't me, right? We preach through books of the Bible for this reason. Because we can't avoid what the text says just because we don't like it or just because we'd rather not talk about it. If the Bible talks about it, we should talk about it. We should study it and understand it. And some of you didn't groan. You might not care at all. You're cool with it. Let's talk about it. Let's see what it says. And that's great. But just know that as we study these things, my goal isn't to tell anyone, even myself, what we want to hear. My goal isn't to tell any of us what we think should be said. My goal is to tell us what the text says and what the biblical truth is, what the Bible teaches, and then we pray and we count on God to move us, to change us, to challenge us with his truth, with what he has decided is important for us to know. Not my truth, his truth. And not your truth, but his truth. Before we took a break for the summer from the book of Ecclesiastes, the teacher talked about government. You may remember, you might not, once before. And when he did, we were presented with the truth that a good government can bring prosperity. It can bring prosperity, but it can't bring lasting change to our hearts. Does that ring a bell? We saw that earlier in the book, that a good government can set people up, they can set for a prosperous country, they can make life good, but they're not going to be able to change hearts. They can't bring heart change, that the one that we need. And so we should keep our hope in Christ, not in the government. He did bring this up before, that without Christ, government is meaningless. So the teacher has already gone there, but today the focus is not really on government and politics. As we read, what we're going to see, this isn't going to matter if you're a Democrat or if you're a Republican and whether you're heavily involved in politics or not. So maybe you can breathe a little bit easier. It's not going to go that direction. But the focus of this passage this morning is on authority. And because God exists, how does that affect how we daily interact with authority? Because there is a difference between how a person who doesn't believe in God or doesn't live like they believe in God interacts with authority and how a person who does believe in God exists, they interact with authority, how believers, Christians, should interact with authority. So this teacher is very direct when he starts in verse 2. Obey the king's command. Some versions say be attentive to what the king says. Be attentive to it. But that doesn't mean, that's the attend to. Right, attend to what they're saying. It doesn't mean just listen to the king, to the directive, but attend to the direction that the king gives. And the reason the teacher says his audience, and he's talking, it's important to remember, he's talking to an audience that lives under a monarch. That's important to remember, that there is a king for those people, and so that's why he's talking about the king. But don't let that give you an excuse. Don't be like, oh, well, we don't have a king, right? So unless, depending on how you feel about the British monarchy, there is a king now. But we don't have a king, right? And so don't just let yourself check out because, hey, that's not us. Because we're going to see this is us. We are here. We just have to find it. But he's talking to people, an audience that has a king, and he's saying the reason that you should obey the king's command is because they took an oath before God, verse 2. Obey the king's command because you took an oath before God. That's most likely the translation that we're going to see in verse 2. If you're reading the King James Version or the English Standard Version, and even I think those notebooks have the English Standard Version on the one side, they have a translation that identifies the oath as God's because God gave an oath. You might see that in verse 2. But most likely what he's talking about is the oath of loyalty that a citizen would take to their king, would give their king. A citizen in a monarchy would have to swear fealty, would have to swear loyalty to the king that is on the throne. And in the case of ancient Israel, which is the teacher's context, the declaration of loyalty to their king would concede full obedience, and it would have been made before God because God was a part of their kingdom. God was a part of their culture and their society. And so when the citizens, when the people he's talking to swore an oath of loyalty to their king, they would have included God in that oath before God, and they would have actually meant before God. Before God, I will be loyal to the king. And so this oath is not just to the king. This oath is actually to God as well. And so whether you read the ESV or the NIV, one thing is clear in verse 2. The obedience of the teacher's audience is directly connected to God. Obey the king because you took an oath before God, or obey the king because God gave his oath to the king. Either way, whichever it reads, you obey because of God. You obey the king because of God. It's directly connected to God, and that's the point. That's the deep truth that the teacher is building off of. Because of God, his audience must obey their king, must attend to the directions and the directives of their king. Now, I said it before, we don't have a king. But this same truth applies and speaks to us today as well. Because of God, we must obey authority. Because of God, we have an obligation because of God to obey authority. And we have to start with this truth. Whether the oath was before God, or whether God's words were the placement of the authority, both are valid. We, because of God, we must obey authority. This is the truth that we're seeing here. And both Peter and Paul, and the reason I say that we can take king out of it and just say authority, because the New Testament authors took this and explained it in a much better way and made it much more clear for people who might look at that and say, but I don't have a king. Right? Maybe they were in Greece and they were working on their democratic republic and they were saying, but we don't have a king. And Peter and Paul both in their letters took this and say, well, let's stop talking about the king for a moment. Maybe it's an emperor, right? There's differences there. Maybe the New Testament church took this and clarified it for us so that we can see now that it's because of God we must obey authority. And so those two authors reveal that even if we don't have a king, this truth still applies. Peter says this in 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 13 to 14. He tells his readers, he tells us, submit yourself for the Lord's sake to every human authority, whether to the emperor, which was the case during the New Testament, as the supreme authority, or to governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and to commend those who do right. But it's that the beginning there that we can't really avoid what Peter says there. Submit yourself, put yourself under, obey, attend to the direction of every human authority. And when Peter says submit, he means submit to them, push yourself under them, right? Under their authority, every human authority. And his reason is the same reason that the teacher gives. You see there in the first line, submit yourself for the Lord's sake, obey the king's command because you took an oath before God, or because God gave him his oath. You submit to every human authority for the Lord's sake, because of God. Because of God, whatever authority you find over you, you submit to them as a godly way of life, of navigating life, voluntarily, continually have the attitude and the action in your life of submission. Place yourself under that authority in obedience. And to be clear, when Peter says every human authority, he means every human authority. That's why he said it that way. He used the word every, which, because some of us are like, but every human authority leaves all of our loopholes out. It closes every single one of them. Every human authority. Is it human? Authority. right? Is it every human authority, right? We can't, unless you're somehow submitting to your dog, that would be the only time that this maybe wouldn't apply. And we'd be like, you're weird. This doesn't apply. But if it's a human and it's the authority, then we submit to every human authority, right? It's pretty clear. He mentions the emperor and the governor as an example, because that may be the most immediate for his audience. But he says every, from the highest to the lowest. So every human authority would mean for us, police officers, landlords, shift managers, bosses, store owners, when you walk through their doors, that cashier or employee whose store you walked into becomes your authority in that moment. And no, the customer is not always right, not at least in this situation, right? But the librarian, when you go into the library, the person who's managing that store, whatever it might be, wherever you are, the IRS, the DMV, you take your pick, it's every human authority, right? Children, your dad and mom, or your grandma and grandpa, or the head of the household in the home is your authority, right? Governor Wolf, whoever's elected to be the next governor, you know, coming up, right? President Biden are included in that. When Peter says every human authority, he means it. He means every human authority. We submit, we put ourselves under, we attend to the directives of those in authority over us. And notice that Peter doesn't say anything about them being godly. You submit, for the Lord's sake, to every human authority. He doesn't say only the ones we agree with. He doesn't say only the nice ones. He doesn't say only the reasonable ones. He doesn't say only the ones we voted for if it was in the case of an election. He didn't say anything about that, right? That's not the factor in whether a Christian obeys authority. And we obey authority because of God. In fact, Peter sees those situations, the ungodly ones, the ones that we don't like, the ones that aren't reasonable, Peter sees them as an opportunity, because submission to every authority, even the bad ones, is his first example in his letter of how this statement can be true. In 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 12, right before he gives this first example, he says, we need to live such good lives among the pagans, the ones that aren't nice, the ones that don't believe like we do, the ones that are ungodly, the ones that aren't kind, the ones that we don't get along with. We need to live such good lives among them that though they may accuse you of doing wrong, they can see your good deeds and they may glorify God on the day he visits us. This can be true through your example, submission to authority, that by your submission to that authority, whatever level it might be, it might be that store manager that drives you bonkers every time you walk through and you interact with them. But by your obedience, by your submission, you may one day end up worshiping God next to them because of it. So you remember, Peter said to submit to every human authority for God's sake. And here he gives us the why. He explains the why, the for the Lord's sake. And Paul's going to give it to us even better. In Romans chapter 13, he outlines, he expands this for the Lord's sake. In Romans chapter 13, verses 1 and 2, he says the same thing. Let everyone be subject to the governing authorities, because there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. He's like, I'm going to say this backwards to make sure that you understood me the first time. We're going to say it one way, and then we're going to say it the other way, so maybe you get it. Verse 2, consequently, whoever rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted, and those who do so will bring judgment on themselves. Because of God, we must obey authority. We must obey authority because the source of that authority is God's. Authority, dominion, control is God's, but God has chosen to give limited authority, limited control. He's chosen to gift that to men. And in some cases, it is the authority to govern society. God has gifted some men the authority to govern society. In some cases, he has gifted the authority to govern the family. In some cases, he's gifted the authority to govern businesses or employees, and the list can go on. But ultimately, it is God's to give, because it is God's to govern society, ultimately. It is God's to govern the family, ultimately. It is God's to govern work, which is why he talks about how to be a good manager, how to be a good employee, how to be a good parent, how to be a good child, how to be an appropriate governor and government. He talks about all of that because ultimately it's his to do those things, to govern those things, but then he gifts that authority to men. He's delegated it to them to exercise. He's made it clear his authority is best used in accordance with his will. His authority in those areas is best used in accordance with his character, with his desires. But that doesn't mean that men will govern, will use authority in accordance with those things, with his will, with his desires, with his character. How the authority is used is between them and God. And because it was his and it is his authority originally, they're accountable to him. So we'll keep that in mind. The person or the thing that is in authority over you, maybe it's your manager, maybe it's your boss, maybe it's just somebody you run into all the time and you're always in their store, it's your teacher, or it's somebody that you're interacting with, or maybe because you don't have a lot of interaction with authority other than watching the news, you have to remember that they're the ones accountable to God for how they are using his authority. If it's in an ungodly way and it doesn't match with what he said they should be doing, pray for them. Because they're accountable for that. Even if they don't know they're accountable for that, they are. So pray for them. So remember that they are accountable for how they're using God's authority because it's his authority first. So pray for them. But because the source of the authority is God, regardless of how it's used, we should pray for them if it's used poorly. Regardless of how it's used, we have to submit to every human authority because we're actually submitting to God and his sovereignty when we do it. We honor God, the sovereign authority behind the man, not always the man himself. We honor the God behind the authority. And our submission for the Lord's sake, because of God, is a recognition that though they may be a very poor steward of it, God has allowed them in that position of authority. It's his authority. He's a good God. He knows how his authority is being used. He's watching. He's aware. And he would remove that authority if he needed to, if he felt it was necessary. And so if that individual that you struggle with, that individual in authority over you is still in a position of authority, out of a devotion of God, out of a submission to him, because we trust him, because we worship God, because we submit to God, we submit to that man's authority because of God, because we worship God. That's devotion to God, right? That's why Paul, in his explanation, says in Romans chapter 13, you submit not just because you might be punished, but because your Christian conscience demands it. He says this in verse 5 of Romans chapter 13. He says, it is necessary to submit to the authorities, not only because of possible punishment, but also as a matter of conscience, because his argument is their authority is God's authority. And because God is behind the authority, whether good or bad, as a matter of conscience, we submit to them. Because you love the one who created authority, you submit. So to obey is to honor God. It doesn't have to be a king. Right? Those with authority have it because their authority was appointed by God. And so the teacher says, obey the king because of God. Peter says, submit to every human authority because of God. Paul says, be subject to governing authorities because of God. They all say the same thing. So your manager and boss, you honor God by submitting. The head of your house, the authority in the home, you honor God by submitting. Your governor and president, you honor God by submitting. Whoever it is in authority that you run into when you enter their sphere of authority, you honor God by obeying, by submitting. The teacher then, back to Ecclesiastes, he continues, obey the king's command, he said in verse 2, because you took an oath before God. You obey because of God. But then he begins to expose our hearts with the next part, and he's good at it. He gets people. Look at verse 3. Do not be in a hurry to leave the king's presence. Do not stand up for a bad cause, for he will do whatever he pleases. Since a king's word is supreme, who can say to him, what are you doing? Let me explain what he's doing here because it made a lot of sense to them and it probably hurt their feelings a little bit. First thing he says here is, don't be in a hurry or don't be hasty to leave the king's presence. So the teacher's meaning makes a little bit more sense in the original culture, but we have a really good example of this in the book of Ruth. It's just kind of the opposite situation. Ruth, if you remember Ruth's story, she was very concerned about the Jewish people in the presence of the king of Persia. And so she needed to address the situation, but the problem was she wasn't invited into the king's presence, right? Oh yeah, so Esther, sorry, I said Ruth, Esther. Tom got me on that one. Yeah, Esther. So Esther was concerned about the Jews, and they were, because they were going to, there's going to be a genocide. And so she needs to go to the king's presence to say, hey, did you know this was going to happen? The problem was she wasn't invited into the king's presence. And you don't go into the king's presence without an invitation. It's very risky. And doing it wrong, going into the king's presence the wrong way, and you've probably seen movies of this if you've ever watched, like, Anna and the King, the musical. I know that sounds weird that that's the movie I went to, but it is, so don't judge me for that. They go in and they have to be lower than the king, right? They always have to be lower than the king. You go in with submission, with respect, and Esther is in that situation where she has to go in with very carefully, even as his wife. Enter disrespectfully and you can be killed. The same is true, we just don't see it as often, of leaving his presence. It's not only important to enter his presence respectfully, but it's also important to leave the king's presence respectfully. And you've probably also seen this in depictions where they walk backwards out of the king's presence, right? They're walking backwards to show respect, to not offend, and leave too quickly or disrespectfully, and there will be consequences because of the insult to the authority before you. And the teacher is cautioning them, his audience, against this situation. Standing, we'll do this in air quotes, obediently before the king. You stand obediently before the king in his presence. But then, because you don't actually like the king, you're not actually a fan of the king, and I will be here obediently and do what you're saying, and then disrespecting him on the way out. Step, there's my back. And you walk out quickly, and you leave quickly without doing it the right way. And he's saying, don't insult him on the way out. When you're obediently there before him, don't then turn the back quickly on the way out just to get your last jab in. A hasty departure, a quick turning of the back to the authority is an insult. And yes, the king is being obeyed, right? But it can be tempting to disrespect him or insult him on the way out. Don't do that. This is what the teacher is saying. Because of God, don't disrespect the authority either. Because of God, obey the authority. We have to, because the authority is God's originally, and we worship God. We honor God, and we submit to God, and so we obey the authority. But then he also says, because of God, don't disrespect the authority, even if it's that subtle jab, right? The teacher says that doesn't match with, it's not consistent with a recognition that God is behind the authority. We can be tempted to obey, right? But with a turn of the back, with our insults or our little jabs of disrespect to that authority. But that isn't godly navigation of the situation. This is really hard to do though. If I don't respect the authority, it's very tempting to insult the authority when the authority's not around. Sure, I'll obey, but I'm going to make it very clear that I'm not happy about this, that I don't actually respect you. I don't think you're a good person. You actually drive me up the wall and you want to express those things. And the teacher says, don't do it. Don't disrespect the authority either because of God, because it's God's authority. So that person in front of you, it's not godly navigation of a situation to throw in some disrespect. And that can easily turn into a lack of submission, given enough time. Those little things, maybe it's the slam of the door, just a little bit harder on the way out, just to let out your frustration, just a little bit harder, get that sound in there so they know on the way out, were they happy or not with what just happened, right? It's just a little thing. But it's disrespect. The muttering under the breath, the walk away while they're talking, right? While they're talking, you're just like, yeah, okay, all right, we got it, right? That's all of that reveals this tendency in us to disrespect when we don't agree. But that's not an appropriate response to authority, even to the mishandling of God's authority because of God. Because of God, don't disrespect authority. Here's a more current example maybe of how we might do this just in, and I'm even speaking from experience, speaking from my own struggles at times. We might do this with the president or even with the governor, but you might do this the same thing with your boss. Calling him Biden and not President Biden, if you're trying to be insulting, if you're trying to turn your back on him with that, is this exact thing that the teacher says, cut it out. Maybe you always refer to people by their last name. I'm not talking about that then. But for those of us that know this, calling your boss by his last name without the Mr. in front of it, if you don't usually do that, is the turning of the back. And you're saying, I'm going to disrespect you and insult you, even if you're not present. And there's plenty of ways that we do this, not just with the president, not just with the governor, not just with your boss, but there are plenty of ways that we do this. But the teacher says, cut that stuff out. Cut it out because of God, because the authority is God's. You might not like them. You might not agree with them. You might not appreciate them, but don't disrespect them. Don't disrespect them on the way out. Respect the authority with your obedience and in the attitude of your heart, and it's revealed in the little things. Shut the door quietly. Cut the muttering out. All those frustrated things. If you have the dartboard with their picture on your wall, take it down. Stop throwing darts at it. Like I said, the teacher knows, he knows us. He knows how we like to obey, but then disrespect. But he's not done. He's not done. He exposes more in us. So he says, then in verse, we're still in verse 3. It says, don't be in a hurry to leave the king's presence. Do not stand up for a bad cause, for he will do whatever he pleases. So here he's alluding to those times of the authority, the boss, the government, the manager, the parents, the teacher, whoever it is not acting godly, is being ungodly, is doing whatever they please. And the teacher's assumption is it's actually causing suffering. It's an abuse of authority. The way he words this, for he will do whatever he pleases. And who can say to him, what are you doing? The way he's wording this is he's assuming that whatever he's doing isn't kind, isn't good, isn't godly, and it's causing suffering. It's an abuse of authority, right? He'll do whatever he pleases. It's an abuse of his authority. And the teacher says, when they're abusing authority, when they're doing whatever they please, you don't stand up for a bad cause, meaning you don't respond with evil to evil. Don't use this. Don't use their ungodliness as a chance to be ungodly in your own reaction. Don't respond to ungodliness with ungodliness because of God. But don't use your own. This is an opportunity to respond sinfully. Being ungodly back to an ungodly authority isn't going to change anything. They're going to do what they please. It's not going to change that, right? Or their response isn't going to go well. It will likely make things worse. So don't stand up with a bad cause, with bad intentions, when they're abusing the authority. They're the authority, and your boss, the store owner, the parent, whoever it is, they can act that way if they want. They can act in an ungodly way if they want. And again, that's between them and God. They're answerable for that. But we have to fight off the urge of ungodliness in the face of suffering, in the face of abuse of authority, even in disagreements. It can be easy to be a jerk back when they are with us. So this is, now we're not just insulting on the way out. Now we're openly being ungodly in return. We're openly being defiant or rebellious. We're thinking, I'm going to stick it to the man. But again, because of God, because we honor God, we cannot respond with ungodliness. Just because they're going to do whatever they please, don't stand up with bad intentions. Don't stand up with ungodliness. Don't repay evil with evil. Peter, in that same chapter we looked at earlier in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 16, he knows this too. And he tells us, look, live as free people. We get it. You're free people, right? But don't remember, meaning God is your authority, but don't use your freedom as a cover up for evil. Live as God's slaves. Don't use your freedom as a cover up for evil. But you could try to say, well, You're evil, or you're bad, or you're ungodly, and I'm a citizen of heaven. I only obey God. So, and then respond in a refusal to obey. Then respond or use your freedom to cover up an evil response for your selfishness, right? You don't want to do it because you're feeling selfish, but you're saying, well, I only actually have to submit to God, so I don't have to do what you say. And you're using your freedom to cover up your evil. I'm actually just responding selfishly. I'm just blaming God for it. I'm actually just responding with my own pride, but I'm giving credit to God for my own pride, or I'm feeling angry and I want to respond in anger to whatever that authority is. Don't do it. Don't respond because of God. Don't respond to their ungodliness with your own ungodliness. You're God's slave. You honor God. You obey God. So you do not respond in an ungodly way to authority. You obey authority because of God. Paul says that, we saw this earlier and I'll show it to you again. Paul says in Romans that rebelling against authority, responding in an ungodly way, will bring judgment on yourself. In verse 2 of Romans 13, he says, whoever rebels against the authority, this is right after he said that the authority is from God. Whoever rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted, and those who do so will bring judgment on themselves. Don't respond with ungodliness to ungodliness. What's this, that two wrongs don't make a right? Isn't that what they say? And it applies here. Don't respond to ungodliness with ungodliness. And to Peter's point that we looked at earlier, when we live well, we may end up worshiping God alongside them someday because of the catalyst of that testimony of a submission and obedience despite ungodliness, despite abuse, despite unpopularity. And isn't worshiping God next to them someday the ultimate goal? Imagine just for a moment that authority that you struggle most with, and it may not be directly and immediately before you. And so if it's not, imagine our governor, imagine our president, imagine the previous president, imagine whoever it might be that you struggle with standing next to you for God, raising his name with all that is in them because you submitted to them for the Lord's sake. Would that not be the best picture of redemption? To worship God alongside that authority you struggled most with. That's Peter's end goal. We honor God in how we respond to authority, but the other goal is to see others come to believe and honor him as well. So because of God, the teacher says, because of God, don't respond to ungodliness with ungodliness. Because of God, we obey authority. Because of God, don't insult authority. Because of God, do not respond to ungodliness with ungodliness. He continues in verse 5. Whoever obeys his command, the king's command, will come to no harm, and the wise heart will know the proper time and procedure. For there is a proper time and procedure for every matter, though a person may be weighed down by misery. So he reiterates here in verse 5 that submission is appropriate. Right? Submission is appropriate, obedience is wise and godly, and it has its blessing. Right? No harm. God favors those who honor authority in the ways that we've described. God favors those who honor authority by obeying, by respecting, and without retaliation to injustice. And then the teacher says, the wise will know the proper time and the proper procedure, and there is a proper time and a proper procedure. Meaning, this godly response to authority that we've been talking about, obey, do not insult, right? And do not respond with ungodliness. This godly response to authority takes wisdom because there is a time and there is a place to refuse. Some of you are taking that deep breath, collective breath, saying, you're finally giving me my loophole. So not every time. And the teacher acknowledges there is a proper time and there's a procedure, there's a time and a place. And he's insinuating to refuse obedience. But this takes patience and wisdom because you can be, and he says this here in the end of verse 6, you can be weighed down by misery, by the ungodliness of the authority, but that doesn't mean it's the time and the place. And it takes patience, it takes wisdom to know when and if there is an actual occasion where we don't obey this authority. And it's not just because you've been weighed down by misery. There's a lot of injustice, there's a lot of suffering, there's a lot of abuse that God intends or allows us to take. And it is not the time, it's not the place to disobey, but there is, right? There is, and so it takes patience and wisdom because of that. But there is a situation when we cannot submit to, we cannot obey an authority, the boss or the manager or the head of house or the governor or the president, and there are proper times and there are improper times. And so the one time, the improper time to obey, the people of God cannot be disobedient to God. This is the asterisk. Right? Because of God, we don't respond to ungodliness with ungodliness. Because of God, we obey. But the people of God cannot disobey God. If the authority commands or compels us to evil, commands us to sin, then that is a proper time to disobey. It is an improper time to submit. But even then, even if we see this authority is commanding me to evil, is commanding me to sin, is commanding me to disobey God, I can't disobey God first and foremost. And if this authority is commanding me to disobey God, even then you cannot turn the back in disrespect. And you cannot respond with your own ungodliness. It still must be done respectfully and in a godly way and accept the consequences that come. And this is the example given to us in Acts by the disciples in Acts chapter 5, verses 27 to 29. The apostles, those are those disciples that became the foundation of the church. They were brought in and made to appear before the Sanhedrin, the Jewish authority, to be questioned by the high priest, the highest authority in the Jewish world. "We gave you strict orders not to teach in Jesus' name," he said. "Yet you have filled Jerusalem with your teaching, and you are determined to make us guilty of Jesus' blood." Meaning they're speaking the truth. And Peter and the other apostles replied, there's a parenthesis you can almost imagine, "In this case, we must obey God rather than human beings." This is Peter, the same guy that said, submit to every human authority. So there is an asterisk. Even though when it comes to disobeying God, because to have not preached the truth when God told them, you must preach the gospel, you must preach the truth, to have obeyed these men would have been to disobey God and to sin. And so in that case, Peter said, we've got to obey God and not you. But even in this situation, Peter and the apostles were respectful and they accepted the consequences, right? They did not insult and turn the back. They did not respond with ungodliness. They accepted the consequences and they have to accept it, even if ungodly, because if the authority gives a punishment or a consequence that is unjust or ungodly, we submit to it because they're not asking us to sin. And I think my favorite example of this playing out in life is in Daniel's story. Daniel submitted to his pagan government, not a godly government, and he submitted to his authorities in the most godly way he could, and he lived well among them. And in fact, he helped their ungodly country prosper because he found it to be his duty as a worshiper of God to do the best he can in whatever God has placed him. And so he lived well among them. But when they told him to stop praying, he refused because he'd been commanded to worship God and to pray to God by God. And ironically, one of the things he was probably praying for was the prosperity of that country, of that government. But they commanded him to stop praying and he refused. Because it would have been sinful to stop. And so it was the time and it was the place. I'm sure there were plenty of other times when he looked at something and said, I don't like what they're doing here. But it's not the time or the place. I'm not being involved in sin. But this was the time and the place when they told him to stop praying. But he also submitted to their consequences. And even in that, he was still respectful, even while in the den of the lions to be executed. And if you read the story, I love this situation because when the king returns, after having carried out the execution of Daniel, which didn't work, but when the king returns, the first words out of Daniel's mouth to the man who ordered his execution were, may the king live forever. I'm not going to turn my back on you. I'm not going to insult you and disrespect you and respond with ungodliness to your ungodliness. May the king live forever. And Daniel's appropriate response to the authority actually did bring Darius to a place of recognition and worship of God. Because he did this well, because of God, he obeyed authority. Because of God, he did not insult. Because of God, he didn't respond with ungodliness. And because of God, he chose the proper place and time. He didn't disobey God. And as a result, Darius ended up worshiping God. So there is a time and a place for disobeying an authority when commanded or compelled to disobey God, when commanded to sin, to participate in evil, then you can't submit. But this is rare. This is rare. And we are weighed down by a lot of misery, but this situation is rare. So don't let misery or frustration be mistaken for your authority compelling you to sin, but it can happen. But it must be prayerfully considered before you refuse. And even then, we must respect and respond with godliness. So then the teacher concludes his thoughts in verses 7 and 8 in this digression on authority. Since no one knows the future, who can tell someone else what is to come? As no one has power over the wind to contain, so no one has power over the time of their death. As no one is discharged in time of war, so wickedness will not release those who practice it. And here he reflects on a very broad truth in authority. No one is in control of the future. despite whatever authority they may have, they may feel that there's there, despite how tyrannical or autocratic it might seem, even to the lowest level. I don't know how tyrannical that librarian is, but sometimes power goes to the head and you may feel like you have the authority over everything, and it may seem like they have authority over everything. No one is in control of the future. And we live, us and the authority, we live in the present. In the present, we are under their authority. And the extreme of human authority, he mentions here, is to order and demand a person to go to war. He says this, he alludes to it in the second half of verse 8. No one is discharged in the time of war, so wickedness will not release those who practice it. And here he's identifying kind of the extreme extent to which authority can be used, right? That the extreme of human authority is to order and demand a person go to war. It can't get too much more extreme to that, because in that order is the possible order to their death, that they go to their death. That's the most powerful a person can get, an order of death. And we must not respond with wickedness, he says. We must not respond to that with wickedness. But even that authority, and you can even see it in the way that our books read, that authority to the most extreme order you could give lives under the looming shadow of the sovereignty of God. Because ultimately, if you look at the beginning of verse 8, God's is life and death. And that person may be ordering something, but ultimately it is not his to decide life and death. It is God's to decide life and death. Despite appearances to the contrary, despite it seeming that men have unchecked authority and that they do as they please, ultimately God's is the power of the wind. No man has power over the wind to contain it. No man has power over the time of their death, but God does. God has the power of the wind. God has the power over life and death. Jesus is the King of Kings. He is the one who has the ultimate authority. And so when it comes to authority, we obey the King because we obey the King. We obey the King around us because we obey the King. We love the King of Kings. We revere and respect his authority. We submit because we worship the King of Kings. So we submit with all due respect, without revenge or malice, knowing that we only refuse when it means disobeying God. And this, our response to authority, is a huge catalyst, huge testimony in nudging and pushing people to the worship of God, the celebration of God. And so that is our challenge. That is your challenge today, that whatever that authority is in your life, and I don't want you to think, if you have those lower level authorities in your life, stop thinking government, stop thinking politics, start thinking parent, start thinking boss and manager and the authority that they have over you. And it is tempting to insult. It is tempting to respond with ungodliness. Because of God, don't. And you just might worship him next to them someday. Let's pray. God, we need your help because we are proud and we are selfish. We're stubborn. We have streaks of independence in our lives. We don't like being told what to do. We don't like doing things that frustrate us and cause us pain. We don't like when things happen to us that offend us, that cause us suffering, cause us hurt and injury, that make life harder for us. And we're sinners. We tend to respond in ungodly ways because we're not righteous like you are. But will you help us as tomorrow, and even the rest of the day today, we are going to go out and we are going to live under authority. Probably ones that don't love you like we do, that don't honor you like we wish. But we need your help, God, that we would be examples of what you've asked us to do. To obey without insult, without ungodliness. That's hard for me. I imagine it's hard for my brothers and sisters. But will you come alongside us and give us the strength, the resolve, the conviction to live well among the authorities for your sake? Because I do love you, God. I want to live the way that you want me to live. So I pray this, begging for your help. In your name, amen.